Your first week as a deal lawyer. This is Brock.
This is John.
All right, so the first question for you, John, is how does one become a deal lawyer?
There are lots of paths, let's put it that way. I think for some folks, it's the whole reason they went to law school in the first place, and they go looking for a job with an M&A or capital markets position specifically in mind. I taught some of those folks, and most of them had gotten a taste of deal work in a prior position before they went to law school, and they knew from day one that's what they wanted to do. Others get drafted, and I'm afraid I fall into that latter category. I just sort of showed up for work, and I got assigned. I thought I was going to be a litigator, but my firm decided that the highest and best use for me was to be doing capital markets work and M&A, and we tended to do what we were told back then, and so I did.
Did they put one of those kick me stickers on your back?
I think I spent the first 18 or so years with one of those on my back.
So what are the pros and cons of being a deal lawyer?
How much time do you have? When I taught law school, I devote most of my first class to this topic, and I actually wrote an article that's in the book, a chapter in the book, that talks about this. I think, you know, there are a bunch of different things that I like about the kind of work that I do, but to me, the thing that I say what's my favorite part of it is I get to be a generalist. I think that's really hard to do in law today, in a corporate law department or in a law firm environment. You know, you get pigeonholed into an area of expertise, and you end up, you know, after 20 years knowing everything about nothing. I think that the advantage of doing deal work is, you know, you have to know your way around a purchase agreement, and you have to know your way around SEC disclosure requirements and the like. But you do at least have to also be able to issue spot in different areas for each deal that you do. I mean, you have to know a little bit about labor law. You have to know a little bit about tax or environmental benefits. Broad range of issues, at least enough to be dangerous, enough to flag issues, enough to talk intelligently with subject matter experts. And I think that's what I like most about it. Also, let's face it, you get to work with some really smart people. And the other thing that's kind of cool is you deal with people at the very top of your client's organization, and not a lot of other practice areas do that consistently.
Now, I would say one pro for being a deal lawyer compared to being a litigator is that with litigation, the cases could go on for years and years and maybe even decades, whereas a deal typically will be done within a couple of months, if not these days much sooner.
Yeah, and I actually I remember when I was in law school, I had folks who taught me corporate tax and bankruptcy and that type of thing, and they would talk about things like project completion and the satisfaction you'd get from that, and I never really thought about that at the time, but boy, they were right on the money. I mean, it is really nice to, you know, have a closing and say, you know, we accomplished that, we got that done. That's a very good feeling, and it is one that, you're right, for a lot of litigators, it can drag on for years.
What about cons?
Well, I think the biggest con is that, you know, when you're busy in this area, you will have no life whatsoever. I mean, it's just morning, noon, and night. And particularly if you're at the low end of the food chain and you're a young lawyer starting out in this, the work you get is sheer drudgery. I like to tell the story of time I got sent on a due diligence mission. Now, I was born in New Jersey, so I'm not making any fun of New Jersey here, but it was in New Jersey, North Jersey, in December, sleet, snow, what have you, and I was sent to read minute books, and this company had a long history, and for various reasons, they wanted me to start at the beginning in terms of the diligence, so I read 50 years of minute books. The company made shellac, and I was sitting in the headquarters of a company that it smelled of shellac for two solid days, reading 50 years of minute books. It was quite an adventure.
And that's definitely a needle in a haystack assignment, but we'll I'm sure talk about due diligence during another podcast. What questions should someone ask when they're being handed their first deal assignment?
You know, I really think that the problem that a lot of young folks have when they come in, they're intimidating. You know, it's intimidating. You're in a room full of people who've been doing this for a while. They're all your bosses, and everybody seems to know an awful lot more about everything than you do. But I think really the most important thing is to get a sense of where does what I am doing or what I'm being asked to do fit in the big picture? You know, if somebody's going to send you off to review a virtual data room full of documents, which is likely what your assignment is going to be, or to research some fine point, don't get tunnel vision. If you know what the big picture is, what specific issues are likely to be hot buttons on a particular transaction, then you're likely to be more effective and spend more time moving the ball forward than spinning your wheels, trying to figure out exactly what the whole point of the exercise is. And sometimes you really have to raise your hand on that, because many times people will just sort of assume, even though you're freshly minted, that you kind of got an idea of what's going on. So if you don't, do that at the outset.
Yeah, the question could have been, should you be asking questions during? I mean, especially if people are working on a deal, the person that's assigning you will probably be very busy, because they just, and the deals, especially initially off the ramp, are going very fast. But it's important for you to learn, and people do forget, if you're newly minted, what it was like to be that way. And they might not even really realize that you're newly minted. You might just be another body that is being shunted through their office.
You know, if the place you work isn't really dysfunctional, that's always going to be an issue with senior people. I mean, you know, I think that to me there's an iron rule that, you know, when you become a partner, when you get a vice president in front of your name, someone comes in surreptitiously at night, sucks out half your brain, and you forget all the stuff that you had learned on the way up. But I think that if you're a young lawyer, your best friend, if you're not really in a dysfunctional place, is going to be the person sort of right ahead of you on the food chain. And the reason that is isn't because he or she is particularly saintly, but it's in that person's self-interest to bring you along, because the quicker you learn, the more effective you are, the easier that person's life gets to be, because a lot of the work that they've been doing, the low-end work they've been doing, they can shuffle on down to you and hopefully have you doing it, doing a competent job on it. So those are often allies that you can go to and ask those kind of questions if you're intimidated to talk to the more senior types.
And the more senior types might actually not remember a lot of the grunt work, how it's supposed to be done, because they haven't done
exactly.
It in so long. So they might,
exactly.
and they're going to be embarrassed to tell you that. So again, I think you're definitely right to approach the mid-level people and be real friendly, bring gifts, bribe. I mean, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you more. And present company definitely not excluded from that, not knowing how to do the scut work anymore comment.
So from the law firm's perspective, why are they making you a deal lawyer? You know, why are they continually minting new people?
You know, it's everybody who shows up at law firms these days, this business has gotten so competitive and the market is so tough for new lawyers to break in that, you know, everybody is smart, they're ambitious, they're aggressive. But I think, you know, where it works best and where firms are good at picking people out, I think, is if they look at somebody who has all those qualities, obviously, but also has shown an interest in the business side of things and who doesn't appear to approach the law as if it's a zero-sum game. I mean, if you're a litigator, the attitude that I'm coming back with my shield or on it is pretty essential. I mean, you've got to go out and fight battles and that type of thing every day. And you don't want people who are shrinking violets on the deal side, but it helps if they have a collaborative streak in them and don't need to say, well, I won that negotiation, or I won that particular debate today all the time, as opposed to focusing more on moving the process along to getting what the client wants done.
So maybe it sounds like we're looking at this backwards, but what is a deal? I guess we should spell that out.
Well, you can get pretty metaphysical about that pretty quickly, I think, Brock. But to me, a deal, you know, it encompasses, when you say a deal lawyer, you encompass everybody from people who negotiate with the banks to SEC finance types to M&A lawyers, even to the public finance bond type of people. I think a deal is basically broad enough to encompass any kind of a situation in which you've got two groups of folks. Each has something that the other wants, and each has something that it's willing to offer to offer in exchange for what the other wants. So, it's situations where people are bringing something both to the table to accomplish goals that each of them has, and have to work cooperatively to get that, but not naively, and also protect their interests so that they don't get exploited in doing it.
Great. Thanks.
You're welcome.